Hello, everyone, and welcome to Weekly Manga Recap here on April the 13th, 2016. I'm Nick. That's Chris. We're going to talk about manga today.
No, we're not, Nick. We have no time to talk about manga today.
There's none at all to talk about. What are we talking about instead, then?
I feel like we have to talk about the big news, Nick. The biggest of news. Huge news.
Okay.
Weekly Manga Recap has reached an accolade I did not think we were ever going to reach. We've essentially won an award, more or less. So, at the end of these episodes, we always say, you know, give us a 5-star review, leave it on iTunes, help us beat the woodworkers. For months and months, I've been checking diligently iTunes top 200 hobby podcasts. And finally, Weekly Manga Recap appears on that list as iTunes' 125th best hobby podcast. We did it, everybody. We beat at least one woodworking podcast.
A tiny little shitty banner flops down and then hangs from only one corner. Not quite in the top 100 yet.
It just like comes down to like a fart sound effect. We're still losing to like 15 other different woodworking podcasts, but we've beaten at least one, which is a pretty huge start on things. I didn't have a speech prepared. I do feel like we should almost like kind of start out with one, like, you know. I always knew this day would happen. I just wish my father was still alive to see it. I know he's not dead. He just doesn't watch the show, so he's never going to know. He'd actually probably be pretty disappointed if he's like, 125th hobby podcast? Who's beating you? Like, well, a lot of brewing and knitting podcasts. If it were more tabletop shows, I think it'd be okay. But so many things, I'm like, I don't understand.
I mean, we don't actually teach people how to make manga, so, you know, they've got that going for them.
Yeah. But the fact that there's a big enough market for, like, 19 different woodworking podcasts still blows my mind every time. And I'll see you,
everybody.
Yes. Only with your help, though, can we continue to climb and reach the lofty goal of maybe being one of iTunes' 100 best hobby podcasts.
You shall rise.
Yeah. Hopefully. Let's not get out of there. I should, though, before we even get to the manga, though, I should mention something, because I'm kind of sitting on it. But I mentioned a while back that I don't watch anime generally. I just don't have much time for it. But there was one anime I was going to watch when it came out, and that was the JoJo's Bizarre Adventure Part 4 anime when it finally came out. And it just recently came out. I'm watching it because it's my favorite JoJo part, and I'm it's weird, Nick. I haven't read Part 4 in probably like 8 years, and I don't watch much anime. Period. So it's sort of weird going back into it, but I was like, I never thought this series would come out, like this part of JoJo would ever come out in America in any real tangible form. Like, I didn't think I'd actually ever see it. So it's coming out, and it's so incredible. Like, I watch it, and I'm like, alright, it's cool, I like Josuke. It's just the fact that it's so wacky, and the color palette is super 90s, and Nick, the ending song is Savage Garden, I Want You. It's a terrible song. It's awful. I can't stand it. But it's like, holy shit. It's at the end of the song. It's the end of the shows, Nick. It's 90s. It's Moria. It's fantastic, Nick. It's incredible.
And okay. Yay?
Yeah. No, I just wanted to mention it because I feel like people are going to want to be, are curious about it because I mentioned it before. So if people are curious about my thoughts on JoJo Part 4, the anime, it's pretty pimped thus far. Although, I guess I didn't think about it when I was reading the manga. I don't understand fucking Jotaro's hat. I seriously cannot fucking understand his hat. It's seriously, it's just like, it's a regular hat that just halfway through becomes hair. It's the most confusing fucking thing in the world. I'm like, what is it? It's not even like a straight line where you're like, okay, maybe there's some like connection. It's like his hat just fades away into his hair.
Maybe he just has like the visor on. Maybe
no, it's like halfway across his head.
Oh no, I'm looking at the picture. Yeah, That, you're absolutely right. It does just kind of go
it
into
just fucking
hair.
Fades away into hair. It's so
That's
confusing.
How awesome he is.
It is. It's extremely awesome. But I guess I didn't realize it, or maybe I don't remember from back when we did manga. But I'm like in the watching show. I'm like, where's his hat? How's his hat stay on? Where is that a hat?
And then the hair begin.
It's very confusing. But now JoJo Part 4, supremely awesome.
Anywho. We're not talking about JoJo today. We're talking about our regular stuff. We're just going to go straight into the recap portion of Weekly Manga Recap, everybody. And as we declared last week, as part of our Comedy Month, we are having a special little read-through for one chapter of our regular series each week. And last time when we polled people, we didn't tell them what the special coverage was going to be. We just said, choose a chapter to get special coverage.
Yeah.
So My Hero Academy won by, like, a couple of votes. This time, people knew what they were voting on, and Black Clover won in a landslide. It got, like, 50% more votes than second place, which was One Piece.
People were really excited to see this series get this chapter, rather, get a special recap.
And I wonder if it's because there's a lot of characters talking in it, because there's like a dozen different characters who have speaking roles, something like that. Or if they just wanted us to do it for this wacky, stupid beach episode.
Yeah, for the beach filler chapter that essentially comes up. I think it's a combination of both. I am glad that it came out this way, because I'd have been a little bit disappointed if it ended up being something like Food Wars, where there's only like two characters talking to each other more or less throughout
there's
it.
There's no speaking almost at all.
Yeah, well, I didn't even include Bleach. I was like, there's nothing in this. It's right. Just Gerard being like, you're a Bankai persona!
Yeah, you could just do that, and I'd just be like, gah!
I'm like, no, Nick, you have to do it as Adam West. Yeah. So
that sounded very sensible, personally.
So I've actually... a couple things. There's not going to be music for this one. Because though it hasn't hit the previous episode, I don't want to risk these episodes getting hit on YouTube for copyright infringement or anything like that, so I'm going to hold off putting music on them. But I have added some new voices into the celebrity impersonation thing. A couple that I know at least I can do to try to hopefully balance out the fact that last week seemed to be a lot of Nick voices, but there are also some weird ones. Some suggestions I took, some voices in here I don't think either of us have ever even tried before. But I think that's what makes this such a fun experiment. So, we're going to be
all
doing
right.
Black Clover.
Yeah, Black Clover, page 57, A Black Beach Story. Now, before we move on to the actual dialogue of the chapter, let's get the commentary out of the way for this page. Yuki Terata seems to like drawing half-naked women, it seems. Because it seems like almost every single opening color page that he's gotten has been a bit of a cheesecake one. This one is probably the most in-your-face so far. Because, what's her name? Vanessa?
I want to just call her Kana every time.
I'm sorry, that bikini's too small for her.
Yeah, it really is like she's exploding out of it in every way.
I'm not talking about, like, it's you know, super revealing. It's, you can tell it's too small for her,
like,
because it's pinching her.
Yeah, like, you can actually see, like, the extra mammary flopping over the edge of it.
And the way that it pinches around the flesh of her hips, too.
Yeah.
It doesn't fit her.
it's ill-fitting.
I'm not saying that, you know, like, you know, girls on the beach, you can wear whatever the hell you want so long as you abide by, you know, whatever rules they have on there in terms of dress code. I've recently discovered that it is illegal in Florida to wear a thong on the beach, which is weird.
It's an odd distinction for them to make.
But she can wear whatever she wants. That's fine. That looks uncomfortable.
I think the concern comes in, like, it doesn't fit. Like, I know what it's like. I was very fat at one time. I know the pain of trying to put on clothes that don't fit. You However, I have a very nice body. I feel like you should be able to find clothes that fit you a lot better. You don't have to go wear that Brendan Jacobs jersey for 2 straight years like I did. Like I had to. I will say, though, I kind of understand. I don't hate these cheesecake covers because I think in my mind I'm like, look, guys in Jump.
It's the fairy tale of Shonen Jump, whatever.
No, I'm less of that and just the sense of like, look, it's Shonen Jump. These right. things are, they're going to be there. Maybe we don't right. see them as much, but the cheesecake's going to be there. And if this is something that helps Tabata-sensei's work get more and more attention or more fun, you know, go for it. All more power to you. And these characters who I thought that was Rebecca the first time I read this chapter.
I thought it was Sue, and I was like, hey, Chris, so there's this girl in this tight bikini that's totally not important.
I actually typed a tweet that you may have saw that I had to delete immediately afterwards, because I was like, huh, this is the very cheesecake cover of Black Clover this week. That girl on the front doesn't look very important, though. And I was like, oh, wait, that's Kana. And I deleted it and posted up a different one. But...
or whatever the fuck her name is.
Yeah. Yeah, whatever. But yeah, there's like a dozen and a half characters who appear in this chapter.
I think it's Astas who's saying this.
But once again, you know, still makes it on the cover page.
Yep.
I love it.
I think that it's Asta who has this first line.
It's the beach?
Yes.
Alright, so we're going to...
end of the voice number one.
Oh, it's the beach! Dear sister, I'm visiting the beach in a town called Rakri in the noble realm with my co-workers. The influence of strong mana means it's always hot here, and I say it's as popular as a resort for nobles and magic knights. Well, there are trending rumors about mermaid sightings, too. Oh, to me, you are a beautiful mermaid.
That sounds way more sweet and romantic when it's done in the Mickey Mouse voice, actually.
Gosh, Minnie, you're as pretty as a mermaid to me. You're beautiful. Alright.
Finral.
Finral is John Madden, Nick.
Well, I think that we can trade off on this.
Do either of us have a good John Madden?
No one has a good John Madden, I don't think. You gotta be like Frank Caliendo to have a good John Madden. Rialza! Look at all the babes in the swimsuits! Ah!
Well, someday, I'd like to come here with you. And then I could see you in your swimsuit.
Again, sounds way sweeter in the Mickey voice.
It's so disturbing when I read it. I was like, oh, I don't like this side of Asta. He's a lot more tolerable when he seems innocent in his lust for the sister.
Exactly, yes. He's just talking about, like, I want to see your titties, sister.
Yeah, he's like, I want to bang the shit out of you, sister. I'm like, oh, I don't know if I'm comfortable with this anymore.
All right, why don't you try your John Madden for this?
Okay, let's go pick up some chicks. Great, you change into me.
I think that's still him.
Well, it's him, but...
No, I think that's still him.
Oh, okay. We'll be twins! Our selling point will be our snappy dialogue!
The legs are going all the way to the ground!
Alright.
And then Noelle.
Oh, was that Noelle there?
Yes, in the little tiny panel. A little tiny bubble, rather. So first it's Magna, then it's Noelle.
Oh, okay. One's going to be Maximilian Pegasus, and the next is Bill Clinton, so I think you're both.
Ooh, I'm on fire. I'm going to swim up a storm in this loincloth thing Mr. Yami says he uses all the time. Lame.
I think all of the punch out of her lines that it's said by Bill Clinton, because he doesn't have like a next level to go to.
No, he, I don't know if you saw the news story about him getting pissed off at the protesters recently. His voice cracks. It's weird.
All right, we'll just have to wait for him to yell and see what you can get out of that, Nick. All right. So there's Crackle.
Hang on. How do I say it? What's up? Gouch and then Marie.
Quiet down, you blasted idiot! Look, Marie, that's the ocean.
Is that Sean Connery?
Sean Connery came up.
I can totally see him being obsessed with a woman in a creepy way.
And, in this weird system of events, John F. Kennedy's playing his sister.
Oh, how pretty.
Next time, let's come here together, and we can splash around the waterline.
Oh, there is Asta. I want to play in the ocean with Asta.
I'm going to slap the shit out of you, Asta.
Not count, Connor.
Ooh, a new one. Gordon Ramsay, Nick. Can either of us do a good Gordon Ramsay?
Fuck.
Go for it, Nick. I believe in you. Right. I'm like spirit bombing. I'm sending my energy to you.
Kicking back on the beach with a beer. It doesn't get better than this!
This is still you, I think.
Damn it, I gotta focus like on every line. It's so
go
weird.
For it, take your time.
Alright,
Show me! More to the right! The right! No, go left! Left!
Alright, so this is a weird one. Pee Wee Herman came up for Charmy.
Shit.
This is what beaches were made for. If it's food, I know it like the back of my hand.
Right here!
No! What are you doing, Ms. Charmy? Had you hit anyone else, they'd be dead!
Oh. Watermelon juice.
Hello? Is anyone home?
I think this is great. I don't think we gave him a voice yet.
Yeah, I was actually curious about what you wanted to do for him. If you wanted him to just imitate their voice, or...
Oh, you do your impression of the Mickey the Mouse voice. Which is going to be great.
It hit me after I changed it to you, but hair muscles are creepy, Asta. Would you use that transformation magic for better stuff? You're wasting it!
That's you.
By the way, where's Mr. Gordon? Everyone else is here. Oh, Gordon's not good with sunlight, so he didn't come. Aww.
Okay.
I bought a custom-made swimsuit just for this. I'm going to flaunt it in front of that idiot.
Oh, I hope Bill Clinton and Mickey Mouse end up together.
Oh, gosh, Mickey. Oh. He got all sloppy over that kiss. Even I haven't done that yet.
Complete virgin Bill Clinton.
I don't know if I could kiss another girl.
Oh, right there, baby.
I'm just so shy.
not that I want to kiss that guy.
Yeah, like, it's just like Bill Clinton, like, hands behind his back, like, spinning one foot into the ground, looking at the floor, like, oh, I could never do that.
Oh,
jeez.
Wait, dorkster. What do you think of this swimsuit? As a peasant, I bet you've never seen anything so gorgeous. I'm embarrassed, but I want him to look. But I'm embarrassed, but...
Hello! This beach is epic for leg training! Roar!
Look, you idiot!
Was blocking him from getting in the ocean. Who was Magna again?
He's now Clint Eastwood.
Okay.
Can't you control your magic yet? You saved my butt this time. Really?
All I can do without a staff or defense spells the same one place.
And why are you bragging about that, you punk?
Alright, Sec. With his lightning arrows pointing at his dick. Speedo.
I don't know if either one of us can do this one. Marlon Brando.
I have no idea how to do a Marlon Brando. Well, wait. Did Brando do the
one off of you can't refuse? Yeah, that guy. I can't do a good one of him at all, though.
So this is the Vijayraki. The ocean is calling my name. Some sleazy guy is picking up girls.
That's Fineral.
It's now Ben's eye. Where are you ladies from? Can I fuck your brains out?
Go on, you two. Pick some up, too.
His two goons.
Well, but what about you, Sharky?
You fool. I can never do something so vulgar. I'll meet up with you later.
Oh, Swiddle, he's planning to show up and act like he's doing us a favor.
Holy shit, your Marlon Brando is way too good.
It's thanks to me, the magic night, that you guys were able to come here at all, right? I gave you a chance, see? Go on, get out there. Ting. There's some ideal babes right over there. Go on, don't mind me, just go.
You go!
I guess we'll need a second voice.
What a cutie pie!
I guess we need a second voice for the other one, then. So, Oh, or you just want to do your Bane voice for one?
Okay. Hi there, cutie pie. Want to come talk with us about how awesome magical girls are? I like Sailor Moon. He likes Card Captor Sakura, but I was never able to get into it. The dub ruined the story. We had our devoted episodes and everything.
Get lost, insects.
Oh, yikes. She's the one from... Meaning... No. It can't be. Ha!
Oh, God, I have to remember half of these voices.
Gaucho's Sean Connery.
No. Jari!
Magnus
Wing was... Clint Eastwood. Eat this, loser!
I forgot what charm he was. I know I did it, but I don't remember what it was.
Boom, it's John F. Kennedy again.
I think that was it. Watermelon?
Did we just hit something?
I don't think Luck has gotten a voice yet, actually.
Then he is... I keep getting the same two people. He's Donald Trump for 1-9, Nick.
No clue. I have no clue whatsoever. I definitely did not do that. If there's any of those people that had their money, you should know that Luck University is a completely wonderful establishment. It got an A grade. In fact, the Japanese grade, which is above A, is an S. It got triple S grade. So it's wonderful, and I am amazing. Oh, fuck.
It's like the tiniest line got stretched into such a monologue.
Donald Trump talks.
He really does. He takes, give him an inch, he takes a mile out of it. And then he wants that mile to be paid for by Mexico.
Fuck. What was Victoria's voice? I forgot that one, too.
I think she was Gordon Ramsay's.
What was that?
Gordon Ramsay.
Yeah, right.
Best vacation ever!
Oh, you're right. We're here to look for the magic stone, people. Why are you all playing around?
All right, Yami's got a lot of dialogue, so.
Shaggy from Scooby-Doo.
Like you're not. Okay, idiots, listen up. While you were messing around, I picked up some info. Apparently, the underwater temple really is at the bottom of this ocean. But the mana kicks up ocean currents so strong that normally a first-class mage can't get near it. However, on the night of the full moon, the mana becomes weaker, and we might be able to go.
And it's not how much it takes everything cool out of his character when you give him Shaggy's voice. He says to be like such a tall badass smoking a cigar. He's like, Zoink Scoop!
Whoa! Captain Yemi was actually serious about doing his job!
I'm seriously gonna murder you people!
Like the name says, though, the underwater temple's on the ocean floor. You can't just walk to it. So, Noelle, you'll take us there with your water magic.
Huh? With Sea Dragon's Lair, I need incredible magic control in order to move that. I can't. You should ask somebody else. I mean, if that fails.
Yeah, if it feels, the fierce currents will take us all under. We'll totally drown!
Ellipses.
This is a top-secret mission entrusted to the Black Bulls only. There's nobody else. You do it. The next full moon's a week away. Ellipses. Surpass your limits before then!
Alright, do you want to change up Rebecca's voice for the end of this, or Noelle's voice?
Yes, let's do that, because fuck it.
Alright. Snaggleplus.
Sea Dragon's Lair. Right now, it's my only spell, heavens to Murgatroyd, don't you know? Developing it further should be the quickest way, why don't you? Oh, but it isn't working.
You want to take it?
Magic control. Vanessa taught me some tricks earlier, but none of them worked well.
Hang on. Okay.
Maybe I just don't have the ability to control magic. Ellipses. Even if I don't have talent, I won't run. I won't make excuses. I'll just keep working until I figure it out, even.
Caught my ears.
Training too, Asta, as usual.
Oh, you too, Noelle? Well, let's train together, then. If you get out of control like before, I can stop you.
That won't happen again. Ooh, training. Just the two of us. Well, if you insist, Asta, I suppose we could, exit stage right now.
Alright, so I feel like it only makes sense if we finish it off with the singing voice being something.
Okay.
I'm trying to go through to get a new one we haven't gotten that can actually be understood from singing. Okay, Nick, you do Edamon. Edamon is the singing voice in the background.
Oh, wait. One second. Fuck.
They all got there, dear Distance.
No, hang on.
Oh, okay.
I'm trying to think of a fucking... Yeah, I don't know any... I don't know enough of the songs. Oh, well. No, don't know any other songs. Oh, well.
Something, something, blue suede shoes...
Jeff House Rock?
I don't know. I can't remember how that one goes. I never listened to a lot of those.
All right, we can roll a different one then. Bill Cosby. Bill Cosby, the siren.
Hi there, everybody, come and do the beach with me. You swim under the moon and hang out with me.
I hear something.
Huh? Oh, my love, let's sing you more. And when in the rainbows even
singing. Oh, what's that enchanted voice?
Oh God!
Credits.
Professional effort.
I'm bummed though. There were like five voices that didn't come up in that at all. Oh, there are a couple here I've just been waiting to come up, and they just don't.
Oh well.
Well, next time they'll come
We've
up.
We've got a couple more weeks to do it, yeah.
I'm rolling to see if they even come up.
Anyway, so this was a filler chapter one.
It was, but at the same time, it's kind of nice to get them. Like, we got that filler chapter after the one arc that was essentially that mixer. So, I don't think it's certainly not anything new for Black Clover to do this. And it's kind of nice at the same time. It is just sort of weird, but you got to kind of get everybody.
I do want to give it a little bit of credit for going, hey, you know, the Black Bulls, like, the entire group is here for this mission, you know, so here they all are, so you can remember who they are. But because all of them were, you know, doing wild, zany antics and, you know, hurting each other and such, there were very few of them that actually, like, stood out in terms of, like, oh, right, this is, you know, how what their character is. This is what their character is. We, of course, know Gouch very well because, you know, of the big character development that he got in the last arc. We know Noelle and Asta because they're the main characters. We know Yami because he's the captain. But it's like, okay, Finral's a pervert, right. Magna's weird. Luck's weird. You know, Charmy's weird. But she's obsessed with food. So, and Gray is weird. A lot of them didn't really stand out from each other, and so it's like, this kind of seems like a little bit more could have been done with them other than, and Gray copies people. Okay.
There's a good reminder, though, at least of a lot of these people, especially if they're going to become characters with any sort of significant role in the next arc. It's good to get a refresher.
Alright. Let's move on to Bleach. 669. Blade 2. Last time, Yatra appeared before Kenpachi.
And now, was this the one with Triple H in it? With the little vampire dog? Or is that Blade 3?
Oh, that's Blade 3.
Okay.
What'd you do to my dog? Have you checked the lobby? That's such a weird... Triple H the fucking vampire. I'm sorry. And people think David Goyer isn't a cinematic genius.
he's truly a man of legend.
So, last time Yatra appeared before Kenpachi and somehow unlocked his Bankai. Not a lot of explanation in this chapter of if this is the real Yatra, if Kenpachi is seeing things, whatever.
We don't get much explanation of anything in this chapter.
No.
Sort of just bonkais and whoops the shit out of people.
Yeah, it's a very action-heavy chapter. So yeah, Zaraki declares Bankai. He doesn't even name what his Bankai is. There's no declaration of anything. Basically, all that happens is that his Zanpakuto basically turns into this weird meat cleaver, and his skin gets all red, and he gets this kind of demonic look on his face. And he proceeds to beat the ever-loving shit out of Gerard. People observe that, oh, you know, he's got red skin and stuff, and Gerard's like, whatever! You know, people tend to have these awesome-looking black guys, and look at that shitty little broken blade, who gives a fuck? And he tries to punch him, like, you know, this?
Yeah, he, like, literally tries to punch him. He's like, it's not even worth using my sword!
And Zaraki bites his knuckle as he's punching downward, and from that position, uses his teeth to tear Gerard's arm out by the shoulder.
Now, I didn't actually notice it the first time I read through this, but is it supposed to mean anything that Kenpachi's, like, eye markings seem to resemble Gerard's at all? I wonder if it's just coincidence that the ones around the eyes kind of look similar, or if it's meant to be that his Bankai seems to... Like, I wonder if he's like, now I'm the miracle, fuck you!
Maybe. So Gerard, you know, is just like, whatever, I'll just grow back a new arm. And, but Zaraki leaps into the air to attack him, slashes through his shield, and actually manages to cut Gerard's head, and then, gets knocked off the ledge of the platform somehow. I'm not sure exactly how that happens.
It looks like Kenpachi kind of uppercuts him.
It's hard to see from here. It's a guy who says that he was kicked off, but I don't know. You don't really see the impact, the moment of impact too well, because mostly because of the size difference. And so his guy's like, oh no, he's gonna crush the Soul Society if he falls like that. And Gerard's like, I got wings. Flies. And he's like, fuck you, man. I can't believe that you hurt me like this. How dare you do this to me? I will not stand for this. I shall use all my power to destroy you. And Zaraki twists around and cuts him and basically bisects him. And that's the chapter. It was very fast, but there was very little dialogue and a lot of action. Mm-hmm. So
we were kind of in and out.
I'm honestly kind of underwhelmed by Zaraki's Bankai. It's, you know, violent, and that suits him, but okay, he just got super strong. Alright. That's literally it. It's kind of like how I was underwhelmed by Gerard's, you know, things like, I get bigger and stronger the more you try and hurt me. Okay.
It is a very simple Bankai, at least on principle. It's sort of like when Ichigo got his Bankai, and it's like, I'm super, super fast now. And you're like, that's kind of eh. Like, when you have so many other people who have very specific things that their Bankai do, when theirs is something that's kind of like almost an unseen sort of change. Like, he got incredibly strong, incredibly fast, but it's a series with, you know, hundreds of people who are incredibly strong and incredibly fast. Now, granted, this guy's scale is different, but when everybody's already super strong, it's hard to really differentiate and really get impressed by someone being even stronger than them.
Right.
But we'll have to see. There might be more to this than we are seeing at this point. And we still don't know what Yachiru or... Well, not Yachiru. Or is that the little girl's name? What's her name?
Yachiru.
Yes. We don't know what Yachiru's role, if any, is in this. So.
I mean, it is also interesting that the Bankai is actually seemingly directly influencing Zaraki's personality by putting him in this, like, berserker state, almost, it seems like. But, again, there hasn't been an explanation of how it works so far, and if the bunk just gives you into a berserker rampage, then it's like, okay, is that all? I gotta see more. Anywho, let's move on all to Fairy Tale.
Fairy Tale, chapter 481, The Historia of the Dead. So, last time, a big group of characters actually showed up at the boat where one of the last members of the Spriggan 12, I guess this is the last of the group that headed in this particular direction, was on a boat. They showed up, and Shimon, of all people, was there. And everyone was like, how are you here? You're dead! And that's when they got revealed that there is a Spriggan 12 member here whose ability is essentially to bring the dead back. He has the Historia magic, essentially. So this chapter begins with him essentially explaining that, like, I'm surprised you caught on his so quickly. Yes, this is a Historia for all of you. He says, I'm a wizard of the heart. I peer into your hearts and see the many memories and feelings within you, and then I make them real again. My magic is life make. I create beautiful Historias. And Simon starts walking forward like Kagura, and he just fucking explodes. He's like, you've gotten so big. Just explodes.
He's immediately like, ah! And Gerard's like, it's an illusion. You shut up!
It's an illusion, you big dumb idiot. I love that he's about to get that line out too, like, you've gotten so big. Do you remember the Justice League Unlimited episode where it's like Hawkgirl? It's essentially like the Defenders. Like, it's an allusion to the Defenders. So it's like Dr. Fate, Hawkgirl, and who else? It's supposed to be someone who represents the Hulk, I guess. Oh, Solomon Grundy represents the Hulk. And they have someone else in there too, I forget who. Oh, Aquaman, that's it. And the whole episode's like a Solomon Grundy two-parter. And, like, he's like, Solomon Grundy just wants his desserts.
Like, the saddest Solomon Grundy story you could possibly tell.
Yeah, so, like, at the end
Grundy wants his soul back.
Yeah, Grundy's dying, and it's just him, like, laying on the ground. Like, the whole thing's like also about Hawkgirl not being...
an atheist.
Yeah, she's an atheist. So it's, like, in the last moment, he's like, is Grundy have soul? And it's, like, Hawkgirl, like... Grundy, I don't... And, like, it turns back to him, like... this series in Fairy Tale. That's like, the moment.
He's like you know, a dying child, pretty much. And she's like, yes, you got it back, Grundy.
And this series, that moment happens, and a fucking cinder block just falls and crushes his face. Like, Grundy, get justice up!
No, I can still save him!
Yeah, four! Alright, so they realize it's an illusion.
Anyway, that's about three references that people aren't going to get.
They realize it's an illusion, but he can bring back all of their memories, and he does it. He snaps his finger, and another figure appears behind Erza. And I don't actually remember who this girl is. He says she's Ikaruga, but I don't
remember her either. It must be from like an early goddamn fight. Let's look her up, and you keep on going.
Okay. So, she shows up and is fighting Erza. Now, the blast had essentially blown a hole in the ship, and that's what Gerard just fell through. So Kaguya goes down to save him. She gets stuck underneath the anchor too, it looks like, actually. And she frees herself. She's like, I have to go help Erza. But then she's like, I guess I should help Gerard, although he's the guy who killed my big brother. People are saying it's the character she fought in the Tower of Heaven arc.
Yeah, she had a magic katana thing.
I'm vaguely remembering her.
Well, that was from a long-ass time ago, so...
Yeah. I know it's the opponent she fought that Erza had to use this form against. Like, she had to use, like, the regular katana. She's like, I can't use magic, so I'll just beat you with swordsmanship or something like that. And this character is kind of Shane. I'm like, what's become of you, Erza? You're lacking the edge you once had. And then Azuma shows up, who I believe is the opponent she fought back when they were on the island during the S-rank promotion arc.
And he had his wood magic stuff. Yeah.
So he shows up, he's like, it's because she hasn't healed yet. Urza's normally a lot stronger. It's weird, he like shows up to compliment her, and then he's like, no, I'm going to kill you now! But they all do that. No matter who they bring back, they're all antagonistic and fighting. So there's, you know, kind of some action scenes going back and forth, and we even see, what is her name, Kyoka show up.
Right.
The demon from the Tartarus arc that we just recently went through.
And Kyoka just goes, hey, remember that one time where I trussed you up naked and had weird S&M stuff going on with you? Fear me!
Yeah, I'm back. Remember the character who controlled all your senses until you just used friendship to overcome all that and beat me? I'm back. And this is sort of weird. So Azuma's like, wait, did you die? And Ikaruga's like, oh, Azuma-han. I'm like, do these characters even know each other? I don't remember if they knew each other.
I don't fucking know. I don't remember where all these characters came from. But didn't he establish, like, these are characters from your memories?
Yeah.
They're not necessarily dead.
Yeah. They don't have to be dead at all. It just...
I'm sure a number of them are dead.
Mm-hmm. In fact, I think everyone they've brought back thus far is dead. Ikaruga might have lived. So maybe that's the joke they're making. So, yeah, maybe that's it. But anyway, the Spriggan 12 member explains that normally such foes would not be allied against you, but Historia ties them all together. My, how lovely! And they'll spread far and wide. Historia of the dead! And... suddenly it gets very cold out, and shows up. You know, Gray's mother, she shows up, and she's about to fight against Gray and Leon.
And that's something that I want to see.
Oh, yeah, that should be
pretty
sweet.
That's like, okay, of all the fucking people that get brought back for this, like, literally every single character that got brought back is like, don't care, don't care, don't care, don't care, don't care, don't care. Oh, shit! Ur's there. Like, for Gray and Leon. Like, all right, that's like literally the only character that means something to me.
Mm-hmm. Man, Grace flat like fucking past just can't not get brought up in an arc at some point, though.
Like, it's gonna be like some new character comes in, is like, I am all cry, Ur's son,
or other kid. Like, god damn it,
god damn it, are you going to have super reality distorting powers and then die for some reason, except not really die because friendship too?
Yes! You got me. And I forget what her name is. She sees Zonkro, which was the guy with God-slaying magic that Natsu fought. I guess they just had to show an opponent for everybody. The Necromancer shows up to fight against Luvia. The weird tentacle demon thingy shows up to fight Lucy, or not Lucy, Wendy and Sharia. And Luxus, battered and wounded, says, "Ah, I can't even laugh at this," as he sees Hades is now before him, who's like, "Ah, Yorish descendant." Actually, it seems like he would be a good voice for Sean Carter. Like, "Ah, Yorish descendant." But then we cut back to Urza getting her ass kicked.
And Urza's like, "Why have I had so many fights in this series?"
Because it's somewhat interesting. Urza has beaten all these opponents in the past, but now it's three of them fighting her at once. It's that sort of situation you get into where you're like, Urza's beaten all these people, but, you know, to build a bigger threat, she has to fight all of them at once now. It's like, all right, I see what you had to do with your booking. You only had one place to logically go. You had to beat
the... It's okay, Cena will somehow still win by DQ.
Yeah, you just have to throw all of them at her at once. You managed to beat Luke Harper, you managed to beat fucking Strongman, what's his name, and you managed to beat Bray Wyatt, but now you have to face the whole Wyatt family. Triple threat.
No, not Luke Harper, Eric Rowan, and Bram Strickbone.
Bram something beard dude, fatty beard dude. Oh, yes, entertain me, Astorias, my little battlefield flowers. So, to this point, I was actually kind of into this chapter. I was like, this is kind of exciting, like they have to fight their past. Like, this could be interesting. We've sort of already seen a version of this with Wall, where he's like, oh, you all have to fight your, like, magic duplicates or whatever, and they all switched. This is obviously different because it's like, now you have to fight your past, but just that notion of, like, here are 1,000 different enemies you all have to fight individually. But this at least can have some story development in it, too. I'm intrigued to see at least kind of how this goes. But the chapter doesn't end there. The chapter doesn't end on this thread of all these, you know, Historias confronting our heroes. It ends with Kaguya pulling Gerard out of the water, and she's like, I have to get back into the fight. She picks up her sword, but she looks back down at Gerard, and she drops her sword, and she starts giving him mouth-to-mouth. I guess suggesting maybe they'll be a love triangle? I don't know. It's stupid.
The thing is, I had to look this up. Kagura's had a grudge on Gerard previously, because she was under the impression that he was responsible for the death of her brother.
Which was actually, I think, Elseworld Gerard.
And eventually she found out the truth, and so her resentment towards him has lessened. And so this is why this is an important moment, is because she has chosen to actively save him rather than potentially letting him die. Mm-hmm. The thing is, this is not an earned moment. It's been, like, hundreds of chapters since that plot point was last even brought up. And who the fuck's gonna remember Kagura's backstory? Seriously.
I forgot she was Simon's brother until he showed up and she's like, big brother!
Because what's she done since, like, what, the tournament arc? Because that's Grand basically, Match like, Festival. The only time she's ever shown up, right? Is that when she was part of that tournament?
I mean, she's had flashes here and there, but yeah, it's essentially the biggest moment she had.
So, it's not as if, you know, she's had conversations with Urza where it's like, you know, why do you trust that man? It's like, because he's a good person. No, I don't believe that, or something like that. And, again, she already knows the truth that it is not, you know, the evil Gerard who did that, and not this Gerard. So it's just like, okay, she chose to save him because she knows that he is not a bad person. We get that. Why was that even a concern to begin with? Well, I would buy it would be have been a concern to begin with if we had seen, like, more of their interaction, say, leading up to this fight that they're having. But because she is something like the 25th most important character in this fight, of course that wasn't touched on.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's the curse of fairy tale where it's like, you know, everything moves so quickly that nothing is really built up. And so it's like, all right, well, you're treating it like this moment is supposed to mean something, but it doesn't, because didn't work towards it.
Yeah, it was ultimately a pretty forgettable, like, way to end this chapter that otherwise kind of seemed pretty cool.
Okay, so, and yes, maybe they will end up hooking up, whatever. Although probably not, considering that Urza and Girard is, like, the most...
It's like the one like, OT.
It's like the second or third most confirmed, like, canon pairing. I mean,
I'd honestly consider it the number one.
It's Gajeel and Levy, and then it's either Urza and Girard or Juvia and Gray.
I mean, this is the fucking romance that has carried through, essentially throughout the series' entire run. I mean, he showed up in a big way in the Magic Festival, or the Tower of Paradise arc, and he's been a consistent player in Fairy Tail ever since then, to the point it became a joke on, like, in the community of, oh, a new arc started, I wonder when Girard will show up.
And then disappear.
And then he fucking always did.
Oh, God. So, yeah. Not an earned moment, unfortunately. Alright. Food Wars! Shokugeki no Soma. So, we're on chapter 160... What is it? Where's the title? Where's the title? There it is. 162, Self. Last time, Tsukasa suggested to Soma that he join Central. And Soma is like, what? Are you serious? Kidding? And, yeah, that's pretty much how the conversation goes at the beginning of this one. And Tsukasa just goes, ah. Oh, so you don't want to join, okay. You know, typical sad sack. And Soma clarifies, you're basically saying you respect my skill as a chef, which is, you know, flattering, but, I mean, I would really rather not present Yukihira cooking under Central's banner. And Tsukasa says, oh no, I don't actually care about your cooking. I just want you to be my sous chef. Backhanded compliment.
Yeah.
But he doesn't really see that. It's like, you know, I could hone my cooking further with someone who was of your skill backing me out. So, you know, I would really appreciate it if you thought of doing that. You know, could you, you know, really think it over, please? And so it was like, oh, come the fuck on. Really? Yeah. We cut over to Arina, who is in a class. And
it's kind of cool because the cover, like the title page, essentially is a panel leading into the actual, like, the rest of the story. Like, it's a shot, essentially, from the other angle of where our first panel begins with the Arina. I
thought
it was kind of cool.
Everyone is admiring her, but she is lost in thought as she thinks back to the conversation she had with Alice at the end of Kurikiba's Shokugeki. And, you know, Alice is like, yeah, we could have been better friends if Felicozami hadn't done all that stuff. And then after that dramatic speech, she whirled around on Arina and went full Valley Girl, basically.
Ugh, like, stop with that face! You've been, like, way too gloomy as of late! Quit being so moody and start standing up for yourself already, God! Like, don't think, I don't know, like, you've been totally a shut-in, the moocher lately, lazing around, taking advantage of the Polaris folks' good graces.
It wasn't you told me to run away in the first place, it was you!
Like, OMG, oh, can't deal with this right now, I'm out of 5,000.
So basically, the point that Alice made at the end was, Arina, you need to stand up for yourself. Show him that you are your own person, you're not someone's puppet.
Good one.
Besides, I'd still plan on crushing you into oblivion with totally superior cooking someday, you know.
And if like, you make you it know.
Yeah. Let's see.
I love that little interaction there. It's nice seeing the conclusion to that little discussion. I like it kind of being playful at the end, too. Like, it goes right back to Alice being antagonistic. Like, when she first showed up in the series, that's kind of the role you thought she was going to be. Like, a villain, another antagonist in the story. And she was at the start, but then quickly developed into a much more fleshed-out character. Right. Like, oh, okay. I get this.
And also, you know, you get to have the dramatic end to this conversation that was first presented, and then later on you get the comedic follow-up, mm-hmm. which is kind of a nice touch. I also like the little exchange between Soma and Kuroki, though, where he's like, oh, they sure do get along. Kuroki was like, don't say that where either of them can hear you. Hisako kind of knocks Irina out of her memory, and she's like, oh, yeah, you did a good job. And some random suits come up to Irina and are like, oh, good job. I'm sure your father will be pleased. You know, we are expecting great things from you. By the way, the dude on the right in these panels
is terrifying. Like, his eye just hangs open the entire, like, hey, what's going on? I'm expecting great things out of you. You gonna make that food? When's lunch ready? I'm just gonna be over here stroking at my barely there mustache.
Go have your fans.
Nothing pedophilic about this.
Go have your fan service see, and I totally won't be watching.
Yeah, no, go into the ladies' changing room. I'm just gonna be right here, making sure nobody has peeks on you.
Yep, full page, just like, they're taking their clothes off to change. Here they are, as they're casually talking. Also, Hisako's bending over, so there you go. Boop!
At least they're having a conversation.
Yeah, I can pretend to be looking at the word bubbles.
Nick, if I know anything from, what's the fucking name of that rule? It's the movie rule that, like, if there's two female characters. And they have a conversation that's not about a man, then basically they're doing it here, Nick. They're breaking that rule. They just happen to be doing it in their underwear.
Begins with a B. I can't remember the whole thing. Yeah. But yeah, you know, they basically go over the Shokugeki
Bechdel test.
On.
Is that it?
Bechdel. Yes. Hisako points out, you know, aside from the Cutting Edge Cooking Society, everyone lost, so all of their societies have been demolished. And plenty more are probably going to, you know, have to just watch their, you know, buildings of operation just come crumbling down. But Irina says, like, well, you know, maybe a couple societies are going to actually be able to defeat Central. And it's not as if, you know, father's bad. Izami Nakiri's Central is absolute. And Hisako is very surprised by this. And she says, you know, there's something very different about, you know, your general mood today. So she's wondering if something has changed about Irina. And Irina explains, well, you know, I used to just follow everything that my father said, you know, just did it without thinking. I just did it because it seemed natural that I obey him. But recently I've begun to wonder what it is that I want to do. And as she says that, she remembers the things that Soma and Alice have said to her recently. And then Irina pretty much gets on her, you know, Tsundere thing, and she's like, it's not like I've been influenced by Alice and Yukihira or anything like that. No, that's not it. And but Hisako is distracted because as they're walking down the corridors, she spotted Tsukasa and Soma in the classroom. And so they overhear the last part of Tsukasa and Soma's conversation. And, you know, Tsukasa, you know, repeats his offer, and Soma's like, no, I don't want to be nothing but your sous chef. I want to be able to use my own cooking. And Tsukasa's like, oh, that's too bad.
You'd be a really good sous chef.
And Soma's like, but I want to do my own cooking. Yeah, but you'd be a really good sous chef.
I feel all this douchiness at, like, every time it comes up, too. Like, but you'd be such a good sous chef. Like, stop being, like, bummed out and, like, queefy over the fact that I'm not going to be your chef.
He's like, aww.
Like, it's that silliness we've always seen of him. Like, oh, I hope they like the steak. But it's just that they're like, I really wish you'd be my manservant.
Well, I like that. I like this. You know, he's so concerned with himself that it's not like, you know, he's dismissing Soma's creativity. It's just he's so caught up in himself that he is being very selfish without really being aware of it.
We've been mentioning before, like, well, you know, this guy seemed like a pretty reasonable guy. He's always so cautious of others' feelings, always trying to make sure they, you know, comfortable. You know, this is a guy who never really seemed like, you know, for the first seat of the council, that he'd be the kind who would take Azami's plan and enact it, but this chapter very clearly showed us why he's done it. He's actually a very selfish person, so it makes a lot of sense.
it makes perfect sense why he would go along with the zombies' plan. You know, it's like, because he can get people to follow along with his cooking.
Yeah.
So somebody, you know, gets kind of miffed at the constant dismissal of his creativity by saying, it's like, you know, you've never actually seen what I can cook. I could be better than you. And Tsukasa immediately is just like, do you want to test that theory? And he gets out his cooking tools and he says, all right, fine. I'll take you on right here and now with first seat on the council on the line. But if I win, you'll join Central as my right-hand man. You want to do it? And he looks really badass, too, because, like, he's had his, like, tie flipped over his shoulder this whole time.
Well,
but, you know, he's got his, like, knife in his hand. He's staring real intently. His tie suddenly is flowing around behind him.
Interesting.
He's a chef!
This is the first sign that Food Wars characters are developing superpowers, because Tsukasa clearly has tendrils that he is able to control with his mind, because that tie is constantly moving. Like, if you look at the panels behind
it, longer.
Yeah, it's fucking always moving. It's like it's like he's in a windstorm, but it's only affecting his fucking tie. It's just flowing everywhere. It's just, he's having these badass lines, so it works, but it's just like, where is it moving?
So Soma agrees. He's like, okay. Yeah, I'll take you on. And that's where the chapter is. Okay, so obviously Soma's not going to become first seat on the council.
I feel like that would be a real blow to this entire arc.
And he's probably not going to end up being forced to join Central. But the thing that I'm noting in all of this is they don't have judges present right now. Because it's not like they're like, okay, let's set up a shokugeki. He's like, let's go right here, right now. I got my cooking tools. We got a kitchen. Let's do this. Like, there's no one to judge your dishes, guys. The only thing that I can imagine is that maybe they're like, oh, hey, Eren and Hisako are out there. Hey, you guys can be our judges. But, you know, of course, it's not like they're necessarily going to agree to the whole thing.
Well, I think actually it's not unthinkable that Soma does get placed in this position. Because it would be somewhat of an interesting angle to essentially have him then have to work his way out of Central. Like, he has to win Shokugeki's to win his freedom. And I wouldn't be shocked if Erina and Hisako do get put into that, because Erina's actually in a good place right now. Like, she's gaining confidence based on the fact that Soma and Alice have said directly, like, you need to break free of your uncle's control. We are going to stand up and oppose him, and it would be a rather fitting blow to her thought process if one of the two people who's really inspiring her loses and has to be forced to be placed back in that, you know, under that control, and she's one of the people who essentially has to make that judgment. Because her whole thing is she has the divine tongue. You know,
right.
Her tongue can't lie.
She would make a perfect judge.
So if she's like, she tastes both food, and she's like, ah, Soma, he's so inspiring, you can't lose that. And she tastes the food, she's like, oh, holy shit. No, like, the guy I was pinning everything on fucking just got creamed by the first seat. It places her back in that position where she kind of has to work back up to that confidence of being like, I'm going to tell a zombie to go stick it up his big old, you know, queefy ball sack, or whatever she says. I don't think she uses those terms.
I mean, I'm not going to completely dismiss the idea that that could happen. I mean, it's definitely a much stronger possibility at this point in the story than someone becoming the first seat randomly.
Yeah.
This does seem like a way for Soma to lose something at this point early on, in the conflict between his side and Central, or between Central and the Resistance, whatever. And I do think that it's considerably more likely than him being the first seat if he could join Central. But I think that it is far more likely that there is going to be some sort of way where, you know, neither guy gets what they want. There are a million excuses you could come up with.
Like, someone upstairs accidentally, like, blows up a bomb and it causes, like, debris and shit to fall on their food. And, like, everyone's like, oh, we can't judge now. But, like, Eren is like, I tasted both and this was much better. But, no,
something could get interrupted. They could just, you know, not find a neutral party to taste test, you know.
Someone could intervene, just be like, Tsukasa stop it from happening.
Tsukasa could change his mind and decide to drop the whole thing.
Ishiki could come by and just prevent it from happening.
Right. So, I think it's just considerably more likely that neither of the two proposed consequences is going to come about than either of them.
I just think this is a good opportunity, though, to really establish that bridge in ability between Soma and the First Seat. Because we've seen Soma is at the very least able to beat the Ninth Seat on the Council. And he's beaten the Eighth Seat in an indirect contest. Not taste-related, but he beat him in that contest. So it'd be nice to see what that gap is between where Soma is presently and being able to beat the Ninth and kind of Eighth Seat to going up against the First Seat. Like, what is really that scale of difference?
All right, let's do My Hero Academia. Number 86, Before the Storm. We actually open up with the press conference continuing, which has the principal and Blood King and Aizawa present. Didn't recognize it was Aizawa because he wasn't, you know, the eraser head stuff.
Yeah.
Right. He's wearing a suit and his hair is all slicked back. It's very odd. So an interviewer is like, hey, you know, Mr. Eraserhead, you know, you claimed that, you know, you gave students the authorization to fight but, you know, what were your intentions at that point? He's like, well, you know, I did in order to avoid the worst case scenario. And they're like, oh, really? And how else would you describe a situation where 26 kids were wounded and one was kidnapped than the worst case scenario? And as I was like, I would say the worst case scenario would have been some of them dying.
The guy, yes. And I love that the reporter has this look of just like, fuck you. You fuck, that's not a good answer.
The principal kind of takes over and is like, you know, because some of the students fought back, that helps actually minimize some of the damage by one of the quirks who had, you know, the gas that was disabling people. And so the guy's like, oh, well, so is it just a silver line that none of them have, you know, suffered emotional trauma? And the person's like, well, we think that we actually helped things out because of that. And he's like, all right, well, what about young Bakugo who was abducted? And he goes on this long explanation about it. I was like, you know, do you think that, you know, because of that attitude of his, the violence I demonstrated in the festival of victory, do you think that made him a target? What if he's manipulated and set down a path of evil? Can you provide proof that the boy still has a future? And so Blood King is really thinking like, oh man, I thought I was gonna lose his cool. He knows he hates the media. He's trying to goad him. And instead, Aizawa actually bows in apology and says, you know, if he does anything, you know, if he has any lapse of behavior, then that's my failing, and I take responsibility for it. But I believe in him. You know, he has really strong beliefs, and he has really strong ideals, and I think that he is going to continue to pursue the title of top hero, and if the villains think that they can turn him, then they're not thinking this all the way through. And cunty reporter is still like, I'm still not convinced of anything. I'm gonna get something like this. I'm gonna stir this fucking pot. I swear to God. He's like, well, what are you gonna do then? What are you gonna do about this? And the principal says, we are approaching this passively and cooperating with the police in their ongoing investigation. We will retrieve the student who was taken from us. Meanwhile, in the villain's hideout, Bakugo's like, all right, Yue's on my side, but I'm going to get you assholes to get out of here myself. He strikes this really weird pose, too, his avatar, because he's like, ah! It cannot be an effective fighting stance. So he's thinking to himself, okay, they have deliberately captured me. So I don't think that they're going to try and actually kill me. So I should take advantage of that to try and, you know, catch them while they're still half-assing things. beat up a couple of them and make my escape. And he points out, you know, I still have permission to fight back.
I do like that logic he holds on to. Like, well, Azawa never told me it's over yet, so...
And if he did, I didn't hear him. So, a few of the different villains are proposing different things. Toga is like, can I stab him? Or, can I stab him?
I want to stab him.
The condenser guy is like, why didn't this guy just pretend that we'd won him over, and then that way, you know, he could make his escape later? But Baku just says, well, if I don't feel, you know, a certain way, I'm not going to lie about it. So, and also, I don't feel like hanging around this place much longer. So, Tamura, the explosion that Baku directed at his head knocks the face hand off. And, teleporter guy, whose name I'm constantly forgetting, realizes that he's kind of upset about this. And he's like, Tamura, you gotta stay calm. You can't do what you're thinking. And he's rushing forward. And Tamura is like, no, stay back. This kid is an important pawn. And so he's like, all right, well, he's not going to listen to reason, I guess. And Bakugo is like, no, I'm not. And Tamura says that, you know, it's a shame that... And he's like, we all just heard about the year's investigation, so I can't waste much time trying to convince you. And then he says, Master, lend me your power. And the All for One is watching this whole thing, which, of course, isn't too surprising, because he seems to be watching everything that Tamura does. And he says, smart choice. And then we cut away again. Bakugo might be in a little bit of trouble here. I'm not sure exactly what's going to happen, but, Mike, I don't know, maybe he's going to get depowered or something?
I forget what All for One guy does when he says, I'll borrow my power or whatever.
I'm not sure exactly what he's going to do, but, it could be bad. We catch up with Deku's group. I like how Todoroki is labeled, because his hairstyle is so different.
People are like, I don't know, who is this guy?
And Yairozu is, you know, points out, like, okay, we've tracked Bakugo down to this location, and Ida starts going over things with everyone. He's like, all right, well, the villains are here, that doesn't necessarily mean that Bakugo is here. None of us are really suited to stealth missions, so I'm going to stop this at the first hint of danger because, you know, you guys are important to me. I won't hesitate to notify the authorities. And so Deku's like, all right, thanks, Ida. Now I'm going to think about this for a second. Just starts mumbling to himself. And Ida, meanwhile, thinks privately to himself, I know that I can't really stop your guys, and I respect that. I can't see any more of you than I already have, and this time I'll be the one to protect you. So, actually carrying through on what he told them when he first set off with them, which is nice. And finally, we cut to All Might's group, with all of the gathered awesome heroes prepared to fucking storm the villain base. And, you know, a couple of them are kind of Endeavor is kind of grumbling about having to be there, and everyone's scolding him and like, come on, you know.
You graduated UA, you know.
Yeah. And I'm not sure exactly who is talking here, but they're like, all right, you know, our entire hero society is riding on this operation, and we must settle this now with full force.
I think it's that cop that All Might's friends with.
It seems like it might be, yeah. And Best Genius also notes about, you know, his interactions with Bakugo, which is a nice detail to include there. And also, Tiger is like, oh yeah, and Ragdoll got taken away by this group, so I want to get her back. So, and also,
Gran Torino's there.
Gran Torino, yeah. I almost said Mustang. I was like, that's not it.
It's another Clint Eastwood movie.
The one where he says the N-word a lot.
Also a very offensive term for Asian people.
Many of them. And Polacks.
Anyhow, Gretchen has a little conversation with All Might, and he's like, hey, you know, you got all these people here, but you've also got me, and All Might's like, don't be down on yourself. With the situation as big as it's become, we can be sure he'll make a move. And they're like, well, all for once here, we're going to be fucked, basically. I don't say that. They're like, yeah, let's go storm the goddamn goddamn villain's hideout. And the police officer points out that they deliberately had the principal drop the hint that their investigation was ongoing so that they would think that they weren't right fucking outside their front door. And, they start storming the building. And that's where we leave off the chapter.
This is a good chapter.
The first time I read through this, I was just like, I need it to be next week now! Very, very, very much looking forward to seeing where this goes.
It's a very good one.
Lots of very good setup. Let's see here. One Piece. Chapter 822, Descending the Elephant. Basically, Luffy's group is preparing to set off to go and rescue Sanji.
Yes. They're broken up into four different squadrons. Team Kinemon, which I feel like is horseshit, because Zoro and Law are in that group.
Yeah.
Why don't they get Team Zoro or Team Law? Why is it Team Kinemon?
Team Luffy, who is going to Whole Cake Island. Team Dogstorm, which is basically the people of Zoe minus Cat Viper. Also, Momonosuke is going to stay on Zoe because of the conversation that he had with Zunesha. He thinks, you know, if it's possible, he wants to actually have a conversation with him and, you know, find out, you know, why was I able to communicate with it? Why does it, you know, doesn't know anything about the Kazuki clan? I want to find out more.
He actually has this great line that I like, because he's talking about how he wants to talk to Zunesha again, and he says, I want to ask it a question. For these 1,000 years, what have you been walking toward? And it's kind of like a cool line. This is an elephant that's existed for a millennia, and it's just been walking through the ocean. I mean, the logic of which still makes no sense to me. I'm like, does the elephant just have legs that always go to the ground, or is it like hover? But just that notion of this thing that's just walking along, seemingly aimlessly in the ocean, very slowly, but what is it walking to? We know this is a creature that once had a life. What is it going towards? It's a very intriguing mystery that I'm actually pretty excited to see.
Yeah. There's also a little note where they're thinking, we'll have to be able to communicate between our four groups. Kinemon says, I know that four lands have those mollusks. And Dogstorm says, oh, yeah, the transponder sails, but our land has no such devices. And Rama are like, I saw some wild ones in the forest. And Frankie says, yeah, you want me to make some for you? It's really easy. Sun technological advancement for the entire society.
Holy shit, you just blew my mind.
We then cut over to where Peckham's is, Peckham's place, and Luffy comes across them, and during the whole commotion, apparently the house collapsed on him. Poor guy. But he reveals that he has eaten the turtle fruit, and so he actually is part turtle, part lion, and so he just, you know, went into his shell in order to protect himself as the house collapsed on him. Turtle, half lion. What a weird combination. So Luffy is like, all right, let's go to Big Mom's place. He just wraps like a sash around Peckham so he can like wear him like a backpack and starts running off. Oh, Luffy.
It's where I hear the music, like da 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 da.
Pedro asks to go along with Luffy's group, and...
This is the weirdest fucking exchange, because it's like, here's a collection of the characters you met in this arc, but you don't remember. It's like, if you hid these names, and you're like, alright, now you have to tell me who these characters are, and for everyone you don't, I'm going to play a random song from your iPod to the girl you have a crush on. I'm like, oh god, no! They're like, alright, well then tell us who was the gorilla and the bull from the start when they first showed up. I'm like,
yeah, all these minor characters, you know, show up and are like, I want to go too. And you know, it's like, okay, well, there's Pedro, you know, the guy.
Remember him. Sicilian was one of the Musketeers.
Right.
Wanda,
and like, the Dogstar Musketeers want to go instead, and then Wanda, you know, speaks up. And then whoever the fuck Tristan is.
Yeah, I was like, that's not the rabbit girl. And I was like, oh, it's the nurse that helped him. Right, and then right, it's like, right. Oh yeah, of course, Pastor Yomo. Everyone remembers him, the sheep that Nami was sleeping on.
I honestly do like the build to Pastor Yomo, because, you know, Wanda's like, you know, I've been with the group the longest, and Tristan's like, I need to be there to be, you know, Chopper's assistant. And then the bull and gorilla that Luffy, you know, met before, like, we want to, and they're like, and we fought against Luffy, remember Pedro? And then Pastor Yomo was like, and Nami loves using my tummy as a bed. And then just random people are like, and I want to keep on chewing on buried corpses' bones. Oh god,
it's fucking ridiculous.
And so Catfire just like, yeah, just send Pedro fucking. And everyone's like, well, why does Pedro get to go? And he says, well, Peckham's is going, and Pedro's the only one who can actually keep him in check. Meanwhile, Nami has gotten a new Climatact with power pole extension powers. And he goes on this thing, it's like, oh, you know, he can extend and shrink freely with minimal use of force. This is your new climate baton. I am in all the weather area devices that you gave to me. The only thing is, I don't know what you meant in Sabote when you said you wanted a magic wand. So, and then she's just like casting thunderstorms on people while he's trying to give his long explanation about shit.
Yeah, it's kind of cool because I'm first and foremost, like I said, because it's like, hey, Nami's going to do something. We just upgraded her ship even more. So this means her climate tech can do even more things now. Mm-hmm. So I'm pretty stoked about that. And I like that it's now, like, used the justification of the pop greens to explain. Because I always had an issue in fucking One Piece with the climate tech. It's like, how does all this shit fit into it? I don't get it. Where does all this shit fit? The pop greens are almost like magic at this point, so I can just kind of get to it. But I also like the idea that it's like, now the staff is condensed into basically just one piece that can change shape depending on how you use it. And at the end of it, you know, Chopper's made it. He's made this wizard's baton for Nami. And he's like, and the cost of materials? And she's like, Mirage Tempo. And she just turns invisible. I fucking love Nami.
Since you charge me for everything, I think that it's fair that I charge you for the construction of V-Bike.
Yeah. It does remind me a lot, though, of the scene prior to her fight in Alabasta, where he gave her the original Climatact. I think he also did something similar to this when he gave her the perfect Climatact. You know, explained that it was upgraded with the dials and everything like that. But it's kind of cool seeing it right here.
I just remember Nami trying to read the instruction manuals. He described all the party favors.
One of the funniest, like, it's a cool fight, but it's also one of the funniest fights in One Piece, because it's just her going back and forth between, I found a way for this absurd, stupid party trick to be an awesome combat maneuver, and, like, fucking sprinklers, like, just shoot out. You're like, god damn it, Usopp!
This is a great way to entertain all the boys and girls at the party.
Like, the fact that, like, the coolest ability she had was fucking birds came out and, like, wrapped around fucking this double finger, and then it activated the tornado tempo was fucking great.
Oh, god. So, yeah, we get this nice little image of Luffy's group all gathered together, you know, you've got Pedro in the background and Brooke tipping his hat to everyone, and Chopper and Luffy are all set to go, and Wanda's giving Nami a lick goodbye, and Peckham's is on top of Luffy's backpack.
He's literally strapped to it. Yeah, that's all you just hear is,
Yeah, they set off.
They do it in the best One Piece way possible.
It's so great.
Where they're like,
all right, have fun, you know, and, you know, Kanjuro is like, you know, I'll help you guys, you know, climb down the elephant. And Luffy's like, no, you don't need to do that.
Again, it's that moment where I'm like, this is where the music comes in, like, da-da-da-da-da-da-da, all our hopes and dreams, and everyone's like, oh god, we're falling off the giant elephant, why?
And fucking everyone else is freaking out, Chopper's eyes are bulging out of his head, Nami's hanging on for dear life, Brooke's soul is coming out of his skeleton.
I like Pedro's the best, because he's got the least experience with Luffy, and it's just his face with just giant question marks, just like he can't even comprehend a word at the moment. It's just
like Nami looks like she's going to die because she's like reaching out.
She's like, remember me.
And meanwhile, Luffy's just like, bye guys, see you in Wano.
Catch you later.
And it's kind of funny because, like, literally everyone on top of the elephant, aside from the Straw Hats, like, what the fuck is he doing? And Zoro's like, yeah, see you. And Frankie's like, yeah, bye, guys. And I was like, And even Usopp's like, yeah, yo, make sure Big Mom doesn't catch you.
Yeah, watch out for
us. Make sure you don't crash into the ocean and die. Oh, God. And that's not the end of the chapter, though. As we cut to Alabasta, where Vivi is sitting off, and everyone's like, "Where are you doing? Where are you going?"
Well, yeah, everyone's like, "Why are you in such a
yeah? Where are you in such a good mood for?"
I haven't been out to sea in a while.
Yeah, and apparently, it seems as though when she got word of the Straw Hats, she decided to set off.
Not exactly.
Not sure about that.
We do remember, this is a while back, but they mentioned that there was going to be another Reverie, where are we pronouncing it? Essentially a meeting of the kings. So it would be understandable that she comes for that, but it's kind of interesting we get like a glimpse focus on her now. It may be more than just that. There's a possibility that if this wedding does come, the one between Sanji and Charlotte, royals may attend that as well.
Right.
It'd be pretty cool if Vivi shows up for that and plays a role. I made like a tweet about this, how I didn't expect this character to really show up again in any huge, significant way. Because I kind of thought Vivi's story had been told, and I'm not against her coming back. I think it's actually kind of cool. It's interesting to see, like, oh, is she going to play like a substantial role in something going forward? Not just like, here's a familiar face within the kings and whatnot, the royalty of the world, to have like a sympathetic ear towards Luffy. Like, she could actually tangibly do something in this upcoming arc. It'd be pretty cool to see. So I'm actually super stoked to see Vivi back.
Out of all of the different characters that the Straw Hats have said goodbye to as they continue their journey, I'm pretty sure Vivi stands out as, like, the most memorable.
She's far and away the most memorable and probably the one a lot of people had the hardest time, like, saying goodbye to. It'd be nice to see her get a chance to talk to him again.
I mean, you could have had them do this to if you had the guy stuck in the treasure chest,
Gaimon?
Get the big goodbye where they're holding their hands up like this. I think everyone would miss him too.
I fucking miss Gaimon. But he has a wife now, so it's okay. He found a wife who's also stuck in a treasure chest.
That seems like it would lead to complications.
That's true. That's canon, Nick. He has a wife who's fucking stuck in another treasure chest. But she's not in a treasure chest.
Seems like it leads to complications.
She's in some other box or some other container. But yeah, it's fucking great. But yeah, no, I'm super pumped about Vivi.
All right, so let's move on to Toriko. Gourmet 366, Sealing the Wolf. What? One guy entering a berserk mode and having red skin and brutally murdering people wasn't enough for you this week? Well, have another! That's what happens in this one, too.
To be fair, Torku did it first. We saw this last week. So, Bleach, shame on you. One of us is going to have to change. It's you, Bleach. Like, all right, fine. Now Kenpachi's Bankai lets him control shoelaces. Like, all shoelaces, no matter how far away they are. And he can, like, make you trip over yourself and fall on your sword. It's pretty theme-fitting for him. Oh, shit, they all wear sandals. God damn it. That's like, I'm not doing a chapter this week.
So, the appetite demons, the Blue Nitro that Jiro was fighting against, are all like, we exist only to eat for all eternity. So, we are going to put you into this little tiny golden can to preserve you until we can prepare you and eat you. And Jiro's like, okay.
Cool story, bro.
Just burst out of the binding. And this is fucking the weirdest. This is like the best way that someone has killed someone in Shonen Jump in a while. As he grabs one of the Blue Nitros by the head and just shakes him to death.
He literally, like, you see the little, like, extra life bubbles that they have in their hair just shattering. He shatters all of them. And then all you just see is the fucking, like, everything vital in that, like, Nitro skull just liquefied out of its, like, eye sockets. It's...
And it goes slop, gosh, gosh.
It's like a fucking Mortal Kombat fatality. Like, it's so over the top, brutal, and vicious. It's awesome. I'm like, holy shit, Jiro just liquefied that Nitro's innards.
And I wish that we had actually seen if he actually did launch this guy into space, as he uppercuts another one and says, now you go to outer space. And he shoots up into the sky. I really wish that we had, like, gotten a pullback shot of, like, this, you know, life form kind of leaving the
orbit. Yeah, fuck you!
He is actually taking damage, you know, because they outnumber him. But he's, like, applying damage, knocking to himself to minimize it. And then he's whirling around and punches the other one really, really hard. And he also freezes time for a second.
Yeah, the knocking's apparently a very versatile ability.
And he does what he calls eternal knocking to a guy, which apparently just statuefies him. I guess.
I guess makes him always knocked forever.
Right. Jiro is, you know, worn out a bit from using all those techniques, but when he comes to the last Blue Nitro, he's not even looking at him, and he's trembling in terror as Jiro looks over, just in time for Neo to show up and punch his head off.
It's fucking not, like,
like, literally, his head is off.
Yeah. Like, he has a line at the end of the chapter, it's from a decapitated head.
So, yeah, Acacia's face appears in Neo. He's like, oh, it's been a long time. And Jiro's head says, well, if it isn't Master Acacia. This was pretty badass.
It was an extremely badass chapter, and it's on that level that I guess I'm kind of excited to see out of, like, Toriko's upper-tier characters. Like, this truly feels like a fight where the entire planet is at risk of being destroyed, because the shit that's happened is just absurd. So it's kind of cool to, like, visualize this sort of fight happening.
Yeah, that's it. That's One Piece for this. That's Toriko for this week.
It's a good chapter. I like it.
Liked it more than the Bleach one. World Trigger, chapter 139, Tamakomatsu, part 10. Last time, Yuma and Osamu and Chika showed off all of their new strategies and techniques and stuff, impressed everybody observing them, while Katori Squad went, fuck, 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 fuck! And we catch up with the fight still in progress. Kuga is still causing a lot of trouble as he snaps around through the air using the wires and his grasshopper. And the announcers are like, this is actually working way better than I thought it would be. And it actually helps that Yuma is this small, light guy, because he can move so precisely when he moves through the air. So yeah. But Kagezaki Squad starts to engage, and they basically pincer in on Katori Squad and flank them. And so Katori Squad is like, well, what the fuck are we gonna do? And their operator eventually just takes command and says, you guys need to do exactly what I tell you to do. Because Katori Squad is arguing, you know, Katori's like, I want to go in, and Glasses Guy is like, if you engage, then you're going to get taken down and we're going to lose. And their operator's just like, just do what I say.
And, I just hate her so much. So much.
Which, the operator, Katori, which one?
Katori.
She's kind of an asshole, isn't she?
Just a super... I mean, she gets worse.
She didn't get hurt, because we were protecting you. That's because you guys suck so much, you know you would lose without me.
Yeah, like, it actually, like, she's so much more of a super bitch later on. Which is just like, you know, like, I never asked you, besides, you wouldn't have, like, survived. Like, you're only doing it because I'm the only reason you're possibly going to win. You're like, oh my god, I just want a meteor to crush you. I don't know how a Trion meteor would get in here, or a real meteor, I don't care, I just want it to fucking crush you.
So, Katori Squad...
She's my nega MVP of the week, Nick. She's the character I cannot stand and want to give the least amount of accolades to.
So maybe some future week she'll be your weekly MVP, and you'll be like, but that anti-MVP I gave out cancels it out, so this one instead!
No, what will happen is she'll be my weekly MVP the week she gets fucking murdered. Like, she just gets, like, I want it to be Osamu so much. Like, Osamu just from, like, across the map's like, pew! Like, Iron Man repulsor beams her from across the map, and she's like, oh, I sucked so much! She just fades away, and I'm like, there she go, Nick. She just won my MVP because you fucking died in the best way possible!
Oh, boy. Hana, the operator, sends Katori Squad out into the open. And they're like, we're sitting ducks here. We've got no cover. What are we going to do? And Hana says, no, it's all right. And sure enough, as Kakizaki Squad tries to close Katori Squad, Osamu and Yuma basically flank them from behind. So Kakizaki Squad are forced to retreat. And then Yuma and Osama also break off. So the Tokieda basically analyzed this and says, okay, you know, they understood basically that they just had to change who was flanking who. And now everyone's, you know, kind of spread out in a stalemate. The thing is, though, that this actually plays into Tamakoma 2's strategy, which is to put wires everywhere! Kakizaki and Katori Squad are both like, well, if they're just gonna set up wires everywhere, let's just, like, not go to them.
Yeah.
We'll go after each other, and then they'll be forced to come out into the open, because otherwise they're going to lose out on the chance to earn points, because we'll be taking each other out. So, they're like, yeah, okay, let's do that. So they go after each other. And the anarchist is like, oh yeah, it seems as though, you know, they can't afford to jump into Tamakoma's trap, so they're just going to ignore it.
I love Tokieda. It's like the best, like, two-line thing. Well, boom! I wonder if they can ignore that.
Okay. As Chika switches to using her cannon to just blow up buildings.
It's so satisfying! Every time! It's happened like 6 times in this Rank Wars, and every time, like, it's still fucking awesome. And that is like a pimp-ass way to end the chapter.
Yeah, it's great. You know, you can see things coming together, because they Osamu and Yuma and Chika all have a quick conversation during the lull between, you know, what the other two squads are trying to do, as Osamu's like, we're gonna be counting on you for this, Chika. And she's like, okay. And, yep. Basically, you can't really afford to be, you know, not engaging the fucking mortar cannon.
Yeah.
It's off in the distance.
There's no other snipers in this match, so it's not like someone can counter-snipe Chika. They'd have to go after her, which then leaves them open for Tamakoma to get involved. Like, they're in a pretty bad situation. I think what I really like about this, too, is throughout this whole, like, these two chapters, Osamu is perfectly calm. Like, in every panel you see him, he's just kind of straight-faced looking on. There's no worry, there's no fear. Like, it's clearly a dude who's in control of all the developments here. You know, the past couple fights, he's always been kind of constantly critiquing everything that's going on, constantly going through his thought process, what plan he needs to put in next, trying to do too much, things like that. This entire thing, I mean, they haven't shown a lot of Osamu and Yuma strategizing. They're kind of leaving that to the other characters. But the entire time, it's just cool to see Osamu calm, like, fucking, he's got his fucking swagger on. Like, he's just like, I know where you're gonna go. He's that dude who you're playing, like, a game, like a chess match against, and he's just like, that's what I thought you'd do, that's what I thought you'd do, that's what I thought you'd do, checkmate. Like, you're just waiting for the shoe to drop, and he's like, I knew all this was happening, and fuck you.
Yeah. Fun chapter.
It's very cool. Very cool chapter. This is also apparently the chapter our audience deemed the MVP for this week.
Mm-hmm. Chapter of the week for our audience. That's right.
Yes. I'm actually a little surprised by that. Not because I don't think it's a good chapter. I'm surprised it won very handily the character favorite chapter this week. So apparently the audience is just as excited as we are. I can't wait. Of all the chapters for next week, World Trigger is the one I'm most excited to read. I think I need to find out how this fight goes and starts to wrap up. And this will of course be where, like, Friday of this week we get, like, a message and it's like, Ashihara trips and falls, breaks hands. Like, no!
No, Stephen Strange!
You fuck!
I guess that's gonna do it for Weekly Manga Recap, so let's wrap this thing up. Let's start off by naming our series of the week and MVPs. Obviously, the audience has chosen World Trigger. I actually went with My Hero Academia. There's not a lot that really happened, but out of everything, I mean, you said the World Trigger was the one that you're looking forward to most next week. Mm-hmm. Like I said, as soon as I finished reading My Hero Academia, I was like, I gotta find out what happens next! Ah! The anticipation is so strong, and that's basically why I'm choosing it.
Okay. That's fair enough. My chapter of the week, I think I'm actually going to give to Food Wars. I really liked Food Wars this week. I like that it continued showing us that conversation between Alice and Erina. I like that we've now seen what kind of person Tsukasa is. I like that we're getting this potential bet that could have really interesting implications if it goes through, and if not, it's at least intriguing. Like, it's a very interesting, cool chapter that kind of stands on its own that I'm super excited about. I really enjoyed it.
And weekly MVP.
So, I was told on Twitter that I have to pick Osamu this week, or what? I'm going to be kicked out of the unofficial Osamu fan club.
This is blackmail! This is tampering with the incredibly objective process of choosing weekly MVPs.
The integrity of our weekly MVP awards!
This is why we won't beat the Ward Workers.
This is why we're only 125. I'm going to help us move up, Nick, because I'm not picking Osamu this week. I think Osamu is very cool this week, but he doesn't have a standout moment in this chapter. And it's going to happen, and I'm going to give him MVP that week when it does happen. But the character I like the most this week, and it's kind of a... goes on with what I just said, I'm giving it to Tsukasa from One Piece. I think this was, not One Piece, from Food Wars, like Tsukasa from One Piece. He was one of the background animals. I think it was an extremely good chapter to develop this character, and we know his motivations a little bit more. We know who he is a lot more. We now really are starting to get a grasp of who this guy is. If he's going to be a huge antagonist, it's good to kind of start seeing the layers of this guy, and I'm really excited to see where he goes going forward. He's super intimidating when he just puts a little bit into it. You know, he's still silly, he's still fun, but he can be a very intimidating guy, and I thought it was a great chapter.
I did consider Tsukasa for my MVP, but then I thought, alright, Tsukasa looked cool when he had his tie flaring around him. He looked all serious with his knife in his hand. But he did not grab a guy by the head and shake him at well until dead, punch another guy into space, stop time, and leave a guy petrified, and then have his head punched off, and then keep talking.
So you're giving it to Osamu? I mean, you did a lot. I kind of undersold it, but...
I'm going to give it to Jiro, because he had... The chapter was basically entirely about him being awesome, and it was... I thought it was effective. So I'm going to give it to him for just straight up being punchy awesome. It was a pretty good chapter, and it was entirely because of that. So that's what I'm going with.
Awesome. I think that's a great pick as well. I picked him last week. So I'm actually seeing Wensleydale Cheddar in the chat actually posted up a separate doc for fans to put who they want. They put their MVPs and such for, so people in there can vote on that as well.
Cool.
But there we go. Some good picks there. Apparently I'm out of the unofficial Osamu fan club, but I guess I'll just message the editor and join, unofficial Kukichihara fan club, I think was the other one that existed.
Kukichihara
fan club, or...
Kikuchihara.
Well, I can't join that one because it's too many syllables. I guess I'll join... There's probably a Tokieta fan club or something. Or fuck it, I'm just going to start the unofficial Kitora fan club. Or the unofficial Ninomiya / anti-Katori fan club. I like that. I think that's going to work.
Fuck you guys, I'm going to start my Raijin Maru fan club.
Oh, that sounds pretty pimp.
Alright, that's going to do it for Weekly Manga Recap, everybody. Go out on a good joke.
Well, we didn't do our plugs or anything.
Well, I'm going to do that now.
Oh, okay, well, you said you did the joke. I was like, am I supposed to stop here?
No.
Okay, well, continue then.
Ignore me! Anyhow, thank you everybody for joining us here on hitbox.tv/RolloT, where we record the show normally Wednesdays at 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, although sometimes that does need to change up based on schedules and technical problems and such. So be sure to follow us on Twitter so you can stay updated on when the show goes live and what problems and solutions come up. He is at RolloT, I am at White Ruler of Time, and the official WMR podcast Twitter account is also available to follow. You can also check out all of our past episodes on weeklymangarecap.podbean.com, and you can subscribe to us on iTunes, leave a comment and rating to move us up from place 125.
That's the only way we're going to get forward. We didn't get any reviews this week, so
we might drop to 126.
Nick, we had a lot of reviews and we weren't even on this list for a while. I was going to keep quiet about this. I may have had to blow a few people at Apple to get us. I blew 16 people at Apple and got us 125th in the top 200 hobby section.
See, what was funnier about that in my head was you started laughing after you said Apple, and I thought that you had stopped saying Applebee's.
I blew 30 people at Applebee's, and then I was like, "Why, Miller? You guys don't have any good iTunes? I'm finished sucking this dick, and then I'm out of here."
But we're about to give you some of our awful riblets.
I'm gonna finish this one here. I never leave a job half finished. It's kind of attitude doesn't get you in the top 200.
Oh God. Be sure to send us...
Oh, Nick. Within the span of this podcast, we've dropped to 130.
Oh, blow more people, Chris.
There's only so much time in the day.
Oh, God. Send us your criticism. Ask us questions. Suggest future manga for us to read by sending them to us via email. weeklymangarecap@yahoo.com is the place to send it to. Special thanks go out to all of our awesome Patreon supporters because your support allows us to create all sorts of bonus content for us, well, and you, to enjoy. We enjoy making it, but, you know, it's for you guys to enjoy.
It's for everybody.
Special thanks also go out to Steve Mann, our tile card artist, and you'd find him everywhere. NarokFanboy.deepernart.com, iDropBoozeAtomo.com, Patreon.com/SteveMan. He makes awesome artwork, not just for us. Special thanks also goes out to Infamous Planet for all the help that he has helped us do for our show, including making this frame you see around here, unless you're listening to the audio, in which case, trust me, there is a frame on the video version.
It's pretty cool.
Yes.
Someone goes and looks at it like, I'm disappointed. Like, well, fuck you.
Next week, hopefully, as Comedy Month rolls forward, hopefully we will be ready to talk Hinamatsuri, the suggestion that we took last week. So look forward to that, you guys. We're going to go now.
It's a little bit embarrassing for me to say, Nick, so Civil War's coming out soon.
Right.
And there's some thing that the Captain America Twitter account, the Iron Man account might be doing as well. But if you basically, like, hit the tweet button, then they have pre-recorded tapes of various members of Civil War saying, like, Chris, thanks for joining Team Cap, or whatever. Like, it's all based on whatever your name is and whoever they have recorded. So I did it, and Falcon's like, Chris, man, welcome to Captain America's team! Woo! And it's I know that it's just a pre-recorded message. He didn't have me in mind when he said it. But for a brief moment there, I was like, the Falcon noticed me. I think I might have lost my shit if Chris Evans had been the one to say it. He's like, Chris, thanks for joining Team Cap. I may have just been like, oh, hey, you're welcome, Cap! Like, I'd have lost it right there. Like, there could be someone on the other side of me whose name is also Chris who just sent out that tweet as well, and I can hear the audio playing through his computer too, but I'd still be like, Cap acknowledged me. I don't feel shame for this, though. Like, I feel just as proud of this as I did when I first saw it. I don't know if that's an act of progress on my part, that I'm like, I don't feel shame anymore towards this, or if it's really a worrying sign, like, you should really be ashamed that you're fucking tweeting Captain America's Twitter, like, hey, Chris, aren't I doing a good job?
I was kind of tempted to try and tweet, I'm on Team Thanos, to that account and see if it would do anything.
They're like, Nick, you're a dick. Like, you're a rude dickhead.
Like, Thanos on his throne floating in the cosmos, like, Nicholas, welcome. I shall expect you to serve me well.
Or it's like Josh Brolin, like, eating a burrito, or, Nick, urge to join Team Whatever I Am.
Pay me.
Like, in between doing takes on Labor Day 2. Like, Nick, thanks for action! Oh, shit, gotta go.